and this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. You see it come out of every paycheck, that small deduction for local income taxes. But where that money goes could change soon, and that might have big implications for budgets in cities like Cincinnati. The Ohio General Assembly tucked a provision into the state budget this year. It would send local income taxes for employees working at home to the municipality where they live, not the one where their employer is located. Many cities rely on those earnings taxes for a large portion of the cost of fire and police services and other core services, and some could lose or win big under this change. Conservative groups pushing for that shift have cheered the move, but some tax policy experts and advocacy groups for cities say it's a bad idea, especially since state lawmakers have slashed other funding sources for cities in recent years. We start our conversation with Buckeye Institute's senior litigator, Jay Carson. Jay, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Michael.
So we'll have representatives from a mayor's organization as well as the Greater Ohio Policy Center coming up a little bit later in this program. Jay, I've seen the Buckeye Institute described as a conservative think tank. I think the word think tank is thrown around rather casually, and we might not know exactly what that means. Would you mind describing the Buckeye Institute for our listeners?
Certainly. The Buckeye Institute is a nonprofit organization that seeks to advance typically conservative or libertarian policy solutions, both in the General Assembly and through litigation where appropriate. Particularly, Buckeye is interested in issues of economic liberty and protecting against government overreach, overregulation, and those types of issues. Buckeye was founded in 1989 and has had sort of a presence down at the Ohio State House since then.
And so you all are in favor of this possible change the way income taxes or payroll taxes are collected at the local level because of the disruption to people's workflows, a lot of people working at home, of course, over the course of the pandemic. But as I understand it, Jay, the Buckeye Institute, or at least you, have said before that cities simply don't have the constitutional right to tax individuals who are not benefiting from their services. Is that an accurate characterization of your position?
Yes, that is accurate. And I'd say what the General Assembly did in the budget at the end of last month isn't so much a change, but a return to the normalcy that existed before the pandemic. Pre-pandemic, anytime someone worked, you would be taxed on where you worked. Generally, the constitutional argument is a city has the right to tax its own residents, and it also has the right to tax people who commute into that city and work there. But what had not been the case prior to Ohio's COVID relief measures last year was cities taxing people who neither worked nor lived there. So the budget language is really sort of returned to that principle that, look, you're essentially taxed by the jurisdiction where you are when the work is performed.
The General Assembly that's moving to make this change, or as you would refer to it, a return, is the same General Assembly, is it not, that gave cities the opportunity to continue to collect taxes on employees who were no longer coming into the city?
It is the exact same. My sense is, I'm not going to speak for individual legislators or why they voted one way or the other. But I think when House Bill 197 was passed last year, that was Ohio's COVID relief bill that first brought in this change. Legislators were, for lack of a better word, drinking from a fire hose, right? This was passed, I think it was, literally a midnight in late March of last year at the height of the pandemic when things were closing right and left. And there was a sense there, I think, that the legislature wanted to do whatever it had to do just to simply preserve the status quo. And I don't know that any of them, of the folks who voted on this, envisioned that the work from home revolution, as it were, would continue throughout the following year. And if you remember back in those times, there were some people who were saying, well, it's just 2 weeks to flatten the curve, or there was an expectation of, well, people will be back in the office this summer, at which point the change would seem to be sort of de minimis. But it has lasted a year, and the fact that people have begun to work from home. And I think the other thing that was unanticipated is that for a lot of companies, a lot of employees, they decided, yes, this works for us, and now we're going to continue doing it after the pandemic.
What are you seeing from those companies that do that, though, after the pandemic, right? I understand that the emergency legislation that was adopted in 2020, that is set to expire as it relates to this income tax situation 30 days or so after the emergency order ends. I believe that's sometime next month.
Well, actually, I think we'd argue that what the state budget did sort of superseded that expiration date. By my math, I think the expiration date would have been maybe last Friday, based on when the governor declared the end of the emergency. But I think what the General Assembly did in the budget changes that. And what they did specifically is they said, well, listen, cities can continue to withhold taxes based on where the principal place of work is. But the implication of that is that, you know, it's just withholding, and an employee who doesn't actually work in that office or work in that city would still be able to seek a refund as they would beforehand. And that change applied only back to 2021. I don't know. To some extent, the possible 197 is already gone, I guess. It's already repealed by that budget provision.
We're talking with Jay Carson, senior litigator at the Buckeye Institute. I'm sure you're familiar with some legal action attempted by Hamilton County Auditor Dusty Rhodes, who has a similar opinion of you as it relates to the earnings tax collected during the pandemic. We've got him and another resident from the region suing the city earlier in the summer, trying to stop the city from collecting taxes from non-residents who have been working from home. Now, these types of lawsuits had been filed previously. All of them have lost. But in coverage of this event by the Cincinnati Inquirer and our friend Scott Wortman there at the Inquirer, we did hear from city officials who talked about, I mean, this would be completely devastating for cities. Is that a perspective that you take into consideration when you, I guess, form your opinion on this matter?
Well, absolutely. I don't think anyone wants to say that our city shouldn't be adequately funded or should be defunded or you know, take tremendous financial hits. But I think the first step in any public policy, the first question you have to ask, is it constitutional? And that's where we think that, what happened in House Bill 197 failed. Now that the legislature has essentially changed that to, I think, what is a more constitutional policy, at least going forward, that raises then those second questions of, okay, what can we do that is constitutional in order to fund our cities? And I would point out, and this is something Buckeye Institute has pointed out, Ohio is really an outlier in its reliance on commuter taxes to fund municipalities. And this may well be an opportunity to reconsider just how Ohio municipalities are funded, and there could be a whole lot of ways that takes shape. For example, you know, it could be increased state aid, it could be increased reliance on property taxes or sales taxes or different revenue sharing agreements between local governments. Or likely, you know, all of the above, but the sort of the first question, the first hurdle is it has to be constitutional.
And I'm looking at some commentary from City Councilman David Mann here in Cincinnati, who had provided some statistics from the city's budget office to the Cincinnati Inquirer for some reporting earlier this summer, noting that about 70%. Of the people who work in the city of Cincinnati live outside the city limits, and that the city's earnings tax accounts for 70% of the city's revenue. That's by far the largest single source, apparently. So if they were to adjust and change the way revenue is collected or shared, as you suggest, it would be pretty transformative to the way cities currently operate, wouldn't it?
It would be. And I think something that number shows, and that's consistent with big cities across Ohio. I believe the number from Cleveland is even higher. It's something like 85%. But that points to sort of a problem when you have a city government that is funded by, predominantly by people who don't live there, are not able to vote there, don't have a voice in that government. There's another problem there, right? A sort of a democratic legitimacy problem. So I think it's healthier is to move forward to a system that doesn't rely so much on people from outside the city, especially. And again, there's the argument that it certainly makes sense to tax them when they are working in the city and taking advantage of the city services. But taxing people who neither work nor live in the city, again, as we've argued in the various lawsuits, just doesn't comport with due process.
So I guess your position then isn't that the earnings tax itself is necessarily a bad thing. Like if you live in Cincinnati and you work in Cincinnati and your earnings tax is paid here, you don't have a problem with that.
Correct. Yeah. And again, that's sort of the way Ohio law has been since I think 1950 was the first time that the Ohio Supreme Court recognized that you could tax a commuter who's working in the city. And again, that the rationale there was tied to, listen, this person is coming into the city and they're taking advantage of the city services while they're there Monday through Friday. So they ought to pay their fair share. So there's a connection between the work that's being done in the city and a benefit the city is conferring to that employee.
And now this is a radio station based in Cincinnati. I'm a resident of Kentucky. I do pay a Cincinnati earnings tax on salary here. But if I were doing my show in Kentucky rather than coming in to do it, you don't think I should have to pay the earnings tax?
You're correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that clears up the position here. So what do you hope happens? I mean, where are we on this from a technical standpoint?
Well, I think we've gone through the first phase, right, with the Ohio budget saying, listen, we're not going to have this continued extraterritorial taxation going forward. So the next step, I think, is for the legislature to take a look at what can we do to change the way cities are funded. And this is also a good time because we've got this tsunami of federal funds that have flowed in. So if there is a period of adjustment between the old funding mechanism and whatever the new funding mechanism might be, there's some sort of a backstop there. And I understand with those federal funds, they were not necessarily evenly distributed. Some cities get more than others. It impacts some more than others. But Buckeye's proposal would be that this is really the opportune time for the legislature to start taking a new look at how they fund cities. Because the other piece to think about is remote work doesn't seem to be going away. It was a trend before the pandemic. The pandemic threw gasoline on that fire. But it seems likely that in our post-pandemic world, you're going to end up with a lot of more people who are working remotely.
Jay Carson is senior litigator at the Buckeye Institute. Jay, thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing your perspective with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Michael.
And up next, we'll continue this conversation with representatives from a mayor's organization and the Greater Ohio Policy Center. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The Ohio General Assembly tucked a provision into the state budget this year. It would send local income taxes for employees working at home to the municipality where they live, not the one where their employer is located. That is concerning for some city leaders and policy analysts. And we're joined now by Greater Ohio Policy Center Executive Director Dr. Allison Goebel. Allison, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for the invitation.
Also with us is Ohio Mayor's Alliance Executive Director Carrie McCarthy. Carrie, thanks for being with us also.
Thank you.
Allison, I'm sure you listened in on our conversation there with Jay Carson, the senior litigator at the Buckeye Institute, and I'm assuming you disagree with his position.
In terms of the remote work tax, the taxation on commuters, I mean, I don't disagree that we need to think about diversifying revenue sources for cities. I think the issue is that the General Assembly has limited those possibilities over the last decade or so. And so I think that that is an important proposition, but is going to be a very difficult one in the future. I mean, I will say also that our position as an organization is that cities, because they are reliant on the income tax, that this pandemic is fairly temporary and that things are already changing. People are already going back to work. And so a lot of policy shifting during this really liminal moment, I think would be very detrimental for our cities, right? They need consistency and security of the future. But also I think that that future is going to become clearer to everyone in the coming months.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about what you think cities may have learned about the way that they operate and collect revenue during this pandemic.
Well, I think that's actually a better question for Kerry, because so many of his members at the Ohio Mayor's Alliance, you know, are on the front lines of that. But I think I would say that I think all of us in the state of Ohio are realizing that we need to be really thoughtful about the ways that our cities get the funding that they need to do the important work that they do, both providing to residents, but also providing the economic opportunities that really are driving the state's economy and GDP, right? So we got to make sure that those centers of employment, those centers of economic prosperity, continue to get the support they need in order to support the entire state's future.
Carrie McCarthy is executive director of the Ohio Mayor's Alliance. And Carrie, I know that, you know, you'll find some mayors who are running for election and love the idea of cutting taxes and being more efficient with their government money. And those are always terms you'll hear on a campaign trail. But this particular proposal sounds like it could be significantly detrimental, not just to cities the size of Cincinnati across Ohio. There's only a few of those, but small cities, too. Tell us what you expect the impact of this could be.
Thank you. Yeah, let me just start by saying, you know, Allison's right. The fiscal health of our cities is critical to the health of our metropolitan economies across the state. And when we have, the largest city in a particular metropolitan region whose fiscal health is challenged, that affects all the communities around it. So let's just start the conversation with that premise. We have two issues here, right? We have the issue of how the legislature responded to a unique once-in-a-generation event in the COVID-19 pandemic. And they decided to maintain the status quo around municipal tax revenue, both for the benefit of cities, but also employers who would have had to have instantly changed their withholding administratively for tens of thousands of workers that are working now in different jurisdictions. You know, that was the right thing to do. And it certainly helped, you know, our cities big and small across Ohio maintain some level of stability during an unprecedented period of disruption. So, you know, first of all, we're thankful that the legislature, you know, did that in March of last year. You know, what was passed in the budget was somewhat of a going back on that to a degree, because it allowed for individuals who were working remotely due to the pandemic to now file income tax refund requests in tax year 2021 from the principal place of work city. It could have been much worse. The initial proposal was to take it all the way back to 2020. That would have been absolutely disastrous for cities large and small all across the state. So we're pleased that the provision didn't take it all the way back to the pandemic year of 2020. A win for a period of 5 months, every non-essential worker in the state of Ohio was required by law to work in a different jurisdiction. So So we have the dual challenge now of anticipating how many refund requests our cities will get as a result of people working remotely in a different jurisdiction for this tax year. It's very difficult to determine what that's going to be. And then we have the added challenge. Our cities have the added challenge of understanding what remote working is going to look like next year and beyond. You know, there are signs of optimism right now as, you know, we started to see some activity pick back up in our cities. But, you know, really understanding how employers are going to situate their employees post-pandemic is our next big challenge. And, you know, we are working to try to understand that and navigate those challenges as we come. But look, I mean, the importance of state and local leaders working together to make sure that the fiscal health of our cities is strong. Benefits all of us in small communities in rural Ohio and our statewide economy. So that's really where we need to take the conversation. And, you know, we're going to roll up our sleeves and do the work that's necessary to do that.
Carrie, I'm wondering, since you represent an organization that is made up of Ohio mayors, this does seem like a possible boon for some cities. Would it not be, particularly if you're a bedroom community that doesn't have any industry and you might rely on other forms of revenue to fund your village police or whatever services you might offer while your residents commute into the larger city to work? Is it possible that some cities are going to see a benefit from this if it goes through?
It is. It is possible, but that subset of cities that will benefit is very small. The Regional Income Tax Agency, which works with about 300 communities across Ohio, analyzed what the impacts of remote working would be on those 300 communities. And what they found was that of those 300, 254 would see net revenue reductions with some shift to remote working. So the vast majority of communities, large and small, will see net revenue reductions. And that will greatly depend on it will also affect what type of industry largely makes up some of those communities. Communities that are heavily service-based are particularly susceptible to remote working. Communities that have, you know, heavy manufacturing and other types of jobs that are not necessarily lend itself to remote working, you know, may be affected differently. But, you know, really, it is an issue that by and large affects many communities. You know, the city of Evandale is a good example. We've heard, you know, some testimony from the mayor there, Mayor Finan, about that's a smaller community, but the impacts that a big shift to remote working would have on a community like that, for example, is extraordinary. And so we really do see communities large and small being affected for the most part.
Dr. Allison Goble is executive director at the Greater Ohio Policy Center. And Allison, I understand that your organization released a report to this effect, basically looking at the impact that 20 what are called legacy cities might see. And, you know, for example, Springfield would suffer a net loss in income tax since, according to this report, about 15,464 residents are employed outside the city and 21,992 non-residents are employed inside the city. However, Middletown could see a net gain in income tax revenue since about 18,885 residents are employed outside the city and 14,874 non-residents are employed inside the city. Tell us about that report.
Yeah, so we did an analysis first actually of the big six cities, so the three C's plus Toledo, Akron, and Dayton, and we found that they would lose on a whole over $300 million annually, right, if this commuter tax provision went into effect. Then we looked at the next sector of cities in the state, which we call small legacy cities, right, that are like Springfield, Hamilton, Middletown. And yeah, I mean, on the whole, the majority of those 20 in that cohort would also lose a lot of funds, a lot of revenue from income tax. Places like Middletown, a city of Lorain outside of Cleveland, they might see some net increases, but for the most part, though, the majority of these cities are also going to lose money. And I mean, as Carrie said, then the Regional Income Tax Authority analysis of their 300 cities, which has very little or no overlap of the cities that we looked at, also saw that the vast majority of those cities would lose. So the only real winners here, as you said, might be those very few bedroom communities that have little industry and a lot of residential, and presumably high value residential with occupants and residents who are in a position to work remotely, right? But for the most part, our cities are not looking at, there's very few quote unquote winners here, and there's going to be a lot of losers. And as Carrie said, again, that's certainly at an individual budgetary level, but has regional and metropolitan consequences.
Allison, perhaps a question I should have asked earlier in this program. Is it the individual worker that would be requesting this, or is it the municipalities that would be requesting this from each other?
Right. So I, as a taxpayer, would ask for the refund from my work city, and I would want to receive it. But then my home city will want it, right? So I will have to immediately turn it around. So, I mean, that's one thing I want to raise here, is that before everyone races out and starts making refund requests to the city of Cincinnati, you are not going to receive a 1.8% bump in your income, right? Which is what the rate is in Cincinnati, because you will have to turn that around and then pay the income tax of the home city that you're in, right? So for all the labor that you personally as the taxpayer are going to expend, not to mention all the labor within the city administrations, it's probably not worth the dollars to do.
Carrie McCarthy is executive director of the Ohio Mayors Alliance. And Carrie, I guess you primarily deal with the elected office holders in municipalities, but have you heard from residents? This sounds rather complicated or cumbersome to deal with.
It is. I think in many communities, you know, who we have tax departments that work closely with businesses and residents and try to service them, you know, as best they can. I think the other concern that I think our cities are worried about beyond the fiscal impacts are just the administrative impacts of, you know, an unprecedented level of refunds, starting this year and hitting probably a fever pitch, you know, around tax filing time in the spring of next year. But, you know, look, I think the good news is that, you know, we are making a great deal of progress around getting through this pandemic. Things are starting to normalize. And the law that the legislature passed that the Buckeye Institute has been suing our cities around was an attempt to address an unprecedented moment in time. The idea that it's not constitutional has not had any success in any of the legal challenges that in any court that has heard the case. It's been dismissed twice because they recognize that this is a unique moment in history. The legislature gave cities the authority to do this. For a temporary period of time, the legislature has subsequently come back and tried to address that in a way that, helps respond to some of those taxpayer concerns about tax year 2021 and how long the pandemic has gone on. But if we're going to have success as a state, we have to have our cities and our metropolitan regions have to have the resources that they can to thrive. We have to have, you know, a public safety department that's going to keep our streets safe. And then the last thing I'll say that's critically important about this is, you know, many of our cities offer really important tax incentive offers to bring companies to their region, to their cities. And that is done on the promise that there's going to be some revenue coming back to those cities as a result of people being employed there. So, you know, there are a lot of questions about the future of.
We will continue to follow this. We know it's an evolving situation. We do appreciate the time you all gave us. My thanks to Carrie McCarthy, executive director at the Ohio Mayors Alliance, and Dr. Allison Goebel, executive director of the Greater Ohio Policy Center. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.